For Rock Island County, what's old is new again. And talk about new, Western Illinois University's newest minor is something to chat about in the cities. So you think your kid spends too much time on the computer, gabbing on social media? Well, it could soon pay off. More on that a little later. But first, Rock Island County's issues with an old building and an old political dilemma. The old building is the abandoned county courthouse that was supposed to come tumbling down more than a year ago. But a court case stopped that, and now lingering possibilities of renovating the old structure is surfacing once again. And the old political dilemma? Just how big should the county board actually be? We talked with County Board Chairman Richard Brunk about those issues. What has changed now than perhaps a month or even 6 months or a year ago?
Well, a number of the county board members have determined that they want to at least explore the possibility of a federal courthouse becoming a reality on the site. And so that's the direction that the board chose to explore at last evening's meeting. So that's what we're working on.
So tell me, what happens now?
Well, currently we're working to set up a tour of the building for the General Services Administration and provide them any relevant information that they're needing, so we can determine whether or not, you know, this is a realistic possibility.
Are you still doubtful? Because you've been pretty doubtful in the past.
Well, I may have some doubt, but again, you know, the GSA going in, it'll be, you know, their determination as to whether or not, you know, the building could be in the running, and ultimately it'll be their determination when it comes to the final site to be selected.
Now, my understanding is that the developer, Joe Lemon, is the one who wants to buy it from the county, renovate it, then lease it out to the federal government. So it would be a federal facility in a private building. So does that mean that it would generate tax money for the county?
With a private ownership, you know, yes, there would be some tax revenue there. Although I'm not sure of how many properties in the county generate the kind of dollars that have been kind of thrown out there as far as prospective property tax revenue. You know, I will tell you from the county standpoint that the dollars aren't that significant.
But on the other hand, the biggest opposition that many people had was that of the security concerns. It depends upon what you, in other words, if you put an office building in there, it would still perhaps be a security problem for the neighboring Rock Island County courthouse and jail. If it's a federal courthouse, that would eliminate that concern, would it not?
Yes, for at least 20 years, that concern itself would be addressed. There were two other concerns with privatizing the property also, Jim. One being is that the county's long-term goal has been to consolidate facilities downtown, create efficiencies and long-term savings for the taxpayers. So, you know, by selling the property, you know, we would have to look in another direction as far as accomplishing that goal, and it creates some significant hurdles to that. But that's one other concern. The third concern is simply just the history of the property as the seat of county government since 1841, when it was deeded in a presidential land grant to the county. So it does address the one concern, the security concern for at least 20 years. And I think that's why the board members may have decided, you know, hey, let's at least take a look at this and see whether it's a realistic possibility.
So what is the timeline now? Because we've waited more than a year. I mean, this was supposed to be demolished, what, January of last year? And it's been, wow, at least 15 months since then. How much longer do you know that you're going to have to wait as far as finding out what the federal government or the private developer will do?
Well, we're working on arranging the tour of the building. The state's attorney's office has been in contact with Mr. Lemon. to get clarification on exactly where they're at in the process and trying to obtain, you know, information related to that. The GSA has confirmed that they have a hard deadline of March 22nd for any final proposals to be submitted. So, you know, we're kind of working against the clock to see whether, you know, we can actually get the get all of this accomplished in order to meet that deadline. If the GSA determines, you know, that the building is feasible.
And if they decide that it's not feasible, do you think then demolition is what's going to happen next?
Well, I will tell you this. We had actually started the consultation process with the Office of Historic Preservation, which is part of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, last year. And that process has moved forward. And, you know, at this point, if it were deemed, you know, if the courthouse, federal courthouse option couldn't become reality for whatever the reason, then, you know, we would move forward with that consultation process with the DNR. You know, I believe a recordation process, essentially documenting the building for historic posterity, if you will, would likely need to be completed prior to demolition.
Let's talk about the other big issue that's facing the Rockland County Board. And mind you, there are a number, but it would be the reapportionment after the census. How likely is it that the Rockland County Board will be smaller in size in the future?
Yes. I'm confident that we'll see a reduction in the board through this process this year. You know, there's still, you know, debate going on as far as exactly what the reduction should look like. You know, some feel that based on the advisory referendum from 8 years ago, that the number has to be 15. Others feel that the board should be looking at all relevant information in order to determine the best way of doing it for all the residents of the county.
Well, and one of the discussions I've heard is that you create districts and then you have more than one representative for each district. I mean, there's a whole different group of ideas that are floating out there.
Yes, and actually, you know, those are options that are provided under Illinois state law. You know, the board not only needs to determine the number of members that will be elected in 2022, but it also has to determine whether those members will be elected at large, whether they'll be elected by districts, and if they are elected by districts, how many members per district. You know, so there's a number of things that have to be answered through this reapportionment process.
There are critics who say, you know, I mean, I understand that the board might seem too large, but it was because, you know, there was health care involved and there was payment for members that isn't there anymore. I mean, that's been eliminated by the county board. What is this, 3-4 years ago? So that if you had 35 members or 100 members, it doesn't really matter so much because they're not all getting paid and they're not all getting into a health care system.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up, Jim.
There are people who said that the board, it doesn't really matter what size it is anymore because the health care support that was offered, the health insurance, the stipends and the payment for county boards, that really isn't a factor anymore, so that it doesn't really matter how big the board is.
Right. Well, I know one of the arguments to reduce the board was a money savings. Well, I will tell you that rank and file county board members, if they are able to attend all their meetings per year, they make $6,000. So, you know, at $6,000 a member, you can do the math. You know, another reason that people have felt that the board needs to be reduced is they feel it would be more efficient, which I can understand that argument. You know, there would be maybe a little bit more efficiency to it. But that being said, you know, there's a number of people that are concerned. They want to make sure that the board is able to maintain its diversity. We want to make sure that the board continues to reflect the demographics of Rock Island County. And when I say diversity, I'm not strictly talking about ethnicity or race. I'm talking about diversity in every sense of the word. If you look at our board, we have a very diverse age range. We have numerous women that are on the board. Our career choices, our career paths vary greatly. We have people in higher education. We have people in the medical field. We have people that, farmers. We have a retired foundry worker. I myself work in continuous improvement in food manufacturing. So we all know that our life experiences shape our thought processes. And, so that's why we think that, diversity is important and inclusion is important. So we want to make sure that the way we do this is right, or the best possible option, if you will, for all the residents.
Take me through 2021. 2020 was very tough. Revenue's very difficult during this pandemic. What does the county face now as far as the budget is concerned for the coming year?
Well, I can tell you that some of our revenues, related to the local distribution of sales tax, income tax, and corporate tax, has been down about 30% or so compared to previous year. So COVID has had an impact, obviously. We went through significant cuts as we prepared for this current fiscal year's budget. There's a lot of offices that are really feeling the pain, if you will. We already run with a very minimal staff in most of our offices compared to other counties. It has impacted the county significantly. That being said, we're hoping that the, with the package that was passed by Congress in just the last couple of days, that will be able to help provide a little bit of relief, so that we're able to maybe get some things back on track financially in the near future.
Right now, 2021 will be a year that Rockland County is not operating a nursing home, with Hope Creek now being operated by private concerns. You still have money to pay off, of course, debt to be paid off for Hope Creek. But I mean, what do you think of the transition that has occurred right now? Was it a successful, handing of the baton over to a private company? And what kind of financial impact do you expect from that in 2021?
Oh, you broke up, Jim.
The sale of Hope Creek now is a major issue for 2021. Is that now that's no longer on the county? Well, in a way, you still have to pay off, of course, the debt. But are you happy with the transfer of power to a private company for Hope Creek?
Yes, I am. I will tell you, we're still dealing with some of the housekeeping, working to finalize books and stuff like that. But I will tell you, this is what I look at. The doors are still open. The jobs are still in our community. The residents still have their home. And I consider that a win, because the counties struggled to keep the doors open in the final year or so operating that home. And I can't tell you how many days I was very, very concerned that we weren't going to be able to keep the doors open. And so, yes, I consider it successful. As much as many of us would have liked to continue to operate a county nursing home, it simply was not feasible.
What do you see for 2021 right now? Because you were talking about hopefully you get the federal help, the state hopefully helps as well. You're hoping that tax revenues will come in this 2021, that there'll be a bit of a return to normalcy. Is that what you're hoping for the coming year?
Yes. I mean, as we get the vaccine is more widely distributed, businesses start to open back up. I'm optimistic about the near future. We'll have to kind of take it one day or one week at a time, if you will. Until we get fully back up and things return to more normalcy, if you will. But I'm very optimistic.
Rock Island County Board Chairman Richard Brunk. In a moment, studying social media, it is becoming a class act. But first, there's no St. Patrick's Day parade this weekend, but there are plenty of other things going on if you head out and about. Here's Laura Adams.
This is Out and About through April 4th. Join WQPT for an online preview of Ken Burns' new documentary, Hemingway, March 23rd at 6:30, followed by a demonstration preparing a healthy Cuban-inspired meal. Plus, April 2nd, there'll be a preview of the film at the Bluegrass Drive-In, followed by Sharknado. QC Restaurant Week is March 22nd to 28th with discounts available, and the Mississippi Fairgrounds are very busy with the Battle of the Bands, March 20th at 3, the Gone Farm and Spring Classic Auction, March 24th through 27th, and the Outdoor Hunting, Fishing, and Camping Show, March 26th through 28th. Circa 21 reopens with the Church Basement Ladies in You Smell Barn, a regional premiere, March 19th through May 15th. Dick Tracy and the Case of the Big Top Murders continues at the Black Box Theater through the 20th, followed by La Divina, the last interview of Maria Callas, March 26th through 28th. The Spotlight Theater reopens with the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, March 19th through 28th, while Arch Allies, America's premier tribute band, perform the hits of Bon Jovi, Queen, Journey, Styx, REO, Boston, and Def Leppard at Rhythm City Casino, March 26th at 8. Tomfoolery on Tremont opens March 27th with shows at 7 and 9:30. And Scrambled Eggs, a community Easter egg hunt at Grace Family Church, takes place April 3rd at 2. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
We are seeing several area theaters reopening, and that is good news. But it's still difficult to stage live music acts, either at bars, concert halls, or even arenas. That's why we're happy to feature some local artists who have graced our stage over the past few years. Rebecca Kasid and Alan Morrison are a ukulele duo who take an interesting twist on five decades of popular music. This duo joined us at the River Music Experience to perform one of their original works. Here's Kasid and Morrison with Every Day of the Year. Kasid and Morrison with Every Day of the Year. Western Illinois University's Communications Department is known for journalism, broadcasting, speech, and several other aspects of human interaction. And now it's adding a new minor, social media. Yes, the thing you tell your kids to cut back on could become a way they see their future. We talked with Western Illinois University Associate Professor of Communications, Dr. Josh Averbeck. So what is the process of making social media a minor at Western?
Well, it started with a couple of classes that we had, and they were about social media, but they were named poorly. And so it was about a little rebranding, about bringing together some classes that we had in the department that would fit well. and then just putting the whole package together in a way that was attractive to people. And I think that's really what was missing. I think the interest was there. Some of the classes were there. It was renaming it and, you know, communicating it properly, which is what we do.
That's what you do, and tying it all together. But here's the thing is that when you're talking about communications, I mean, your department, it's such a huge rainbow of things. Isn't that the same as social media? I mean, what exactly is social media these days?
Yeah, it's anything you want to do on a computer. I have students who are talking about just Zoom as a social media, not just a meeting space. And I know personally, I mean, we have sort of Friday night Zoom get-togethers, and that's our socializing. And so that's our media we're using to socialize. And so isn't that social media then?
Absolutely. So, I mean, do you think that in a way this pandemic has almost accelerated the need for a social media minor at Western?
Yes, absolutely. The interest that we've had has been overwhelming. I mean, I get multiple emails a day from students just out of nowhere contacting me that probably would have been interested in the classes that we had. But until we had this circumstance where people are just stuck at home at the computer and this is what I'm doing, and so study what you know, and this is what they know.
Well, and it's been interesting because years ago, I mean, only about 4 years ago, I think, Western Illinois University was talking about a greater online presence. When you're talking about the communications department going into a social media minor, I mean, it almost goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it's a natural evolution, and this is a curriculum and a job market that is just exploding. And so it's nice to know that Western's staying kind of up to date and even ahead of the curve in some instances.
Some parents might be sitting there going, oh gosh, seriously, the kids have been, you know, using their thumbs for one thing only. Do they really need a class for that? I know how you're going to answer that, but what I really like is some of the offshoots of what this minor means, because you're going to be talking about best practices and also the use of social media for research and also a little bit of a history lesson background of social media.
Yeah, absolutely. The courses in the minor isn't just how to be on social media. When we talk about what different platforms offer, what certain audiences are on different platforms, and so if you're trying to grow your brand, where do you do that? If you want to be an organization or an individual who is more interactive, then you do it on this platform. If your company or your product line is much more visually oriented, then stay away from these platforms. So it's about choosing where to go. It's about choosing how to say it. It's amazing the number of, you know, spelling mistakes or typos or 7-page long posts that people are trying to post on social media, and it's just too much. And why are you doing that? You need to come to my class. You need to learn how to do this properly.
Well, and a minor nicely dovetails into a major, and you can see this social media minor dovetailing beautifully into what? Business majors or economic in so many different areas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, marketing, business, even agriculture and law enforcement. I mean, community service officers and police departments are often running the department's Facebook accounts. And so having best practices for them and community outreach and how to speak to the audience through your social media networks. I mean, this is a natural fit for them.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, the other thing is that, and I'm trying to figure out how we have progressed, but it used to be that, oh, these kids don't understand that what they're putting on social media almost lasts a lifetime. And we're seeing this over and over again, where people today, they're looking back at their Twitter accounts 10, 15 years ago. Do you think the students that you have now better appreciate that what they put out there now sticks with them?
There are certain students who are very image conscious and think about how do I make myself a professional from the get-go. There are a surprising number of students who really just need that first week of class of, hey, guess what? That's not going away. For instance, I have them do an assignment where they read the terms of service for two different social media platforms and talk about what they found. And they didn't know that these platforms now own their content, can use it for their own marketing purposes and their commercials. They didn't know they don't own it anymore.
That's a frightening thought. And that is today, isn't it?
Yes.
What about tomorrow? I mean, when we're talking about communications, back in my day, it was radio. It was reel-to-reel tapes, even. And we were talking about CDs were just coming online. Well, what you know, where does social media go from here? Because we're seeing it in so many different ways, and in so many different ways, it's fracturing into different components.
Yeah, it's, you know, on the one way, it's kind of hard to predict, you know, what's the next way we're going to do this? And the curious thing is that we're sort of backtracking in how advanced the technology is. So one of the new apps that's starting to catch on is called Clubhouse, and it's an audio only platform. And so you just basically are on a virtual phone call with sometimes random people, sometimes there's a topic. It's basically a vocal chat room, which is just a little bit different way of doing something that we currently have. But to have something be tied to real-time vocal communication and verbal communication seems kind of out of date compared to what, you know, people are used to doing on social media. So it's kind of really hard to predict. That there's a lot of video and people are really image-oriented, but it's really curious that the next thing seems to be pointed to no video at all, and it's just verbal.
High school students trying to figure out where they're going to go for college. If they're interested in social media, think about Western.
Absolutely. We've got the lab. We've got the minor. We have more internships than we have students. We'll get people job training. We'll get you skills, and we'll get you employed.
Well, that's a really good point that I want to add, too, of course, is that you were mentioning the internships. I mean, there's real possibilities to advance your career in so many different ways with this minor.
Absolutely. And I just pulled the jobs report yesterday from last year, and starting positions are somewhere around 60,000. And then the next stage up with sometimes a certification or just a couple of years, you can get up to, you know, up to six figures pretty quickly just for being able to satisfactorily manage social media sites.
Holy cow. Will you take a 59-year-old guy as a freshman?
Absolutely. We take everyone. We start at the beginning and work our way up.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. Western Illinois University Associate Professor of Communications, Dr. Josh Averbeck. Check out Western's website to learn more about the university's communications program. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.